Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the seventh podcast that I've recorded. I'm recording it in August of 2008. And the title of this one is, I Know More About Investing Than John Bogle, and You Can Too. The first thing I better say is that I have the greatest respect and affection for John Bogle. John Bogle is on my list of the five best investing advisors alive today, and he's had a great influence on all of the investing advice that I offer at my website. Some of Bogle's insights are some of the most powerful insights I have ever seen put forward. So I owe a great debt to John Bogle. I don't mean to pick on him by putting forward the sort of title that I've put on this podcast, but John Bogle has made a huge mistake in his endorsement of the passive investing model of investing. And the passive investing model is the dominant model of today. And if you've listened to earlier podcasts, you know my claim that I believe we are today living through the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. Well, that didn't just happen. That's not just an accident. That happened because of the popularity of passive investing. Passive investing has gotten us in this mess we are in today. In August of 2008, when stocks have performed poorly for 9 years running, and when we haven't yet even seen the huge price drop that is likely ahead of us, that was caused by passive investing, and to a large extent, since Bogle is the lead advocate of passive investing alive today, it was caused by John Bogle. I don't see any way around that reality. I am not a person who believes in hitting on people for their mistakes. We're all human. We all make mistakes. And when somebody like John Bogle makes a mistake, the thing to do is not to hit on the guy. The thing to do is to help him out, lend him a hand. And I've participated in discussions at indexing boards, and I have offered to share what we have learned in our discussions at the retire early boards and the indexing boards with John Bogle. I've written Bogle an email about the valuation-informed indexing approach to investing, and I made plans to appear at a conference where Bogle was appearing, the Vanguard Diehards annual meeting, so that we could talk over these things together. And there are some people who became very agitated about that and changed the rules for the meeting so that Bogle would be, quote-unquote, protected from the horrible, horrible questions that Rob Bennett was going to direct to him. And I think that's very sad. John Bogle is part of our community. He's obviously a lead member of our community. An argument can be made he's the founder of the community. John Bogle is the founder of the indexing approach. So he should be part of our community discussions. And when we learn that passive investing doesn't work, we should be sharing that knowledge with John Bogle and getting him back on track so that the 60% of advice that John Bogle offers, the wonderful 60%, is what he ends up being known for, not the 40% in which he endorses the passive investing model and causes the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. So I view myself as a John Bogle fan, but by no means do I consider myself a fan of passive investing. So the title, if it's a dig at John Bogle at all, it's a dig at passive investing, not at the wonderful advice that Bogle offers when he's not recommending passive investing. But the real meaning of the title is that what you really need to do to be effective in investing is to possess common sense. That's the hardest thing of all. And That's why I both love and hate John Bogle, because the good part of his advice is common sense advice, and I'm drawn to that intensely. But passive investing is a complete rejection of common sense. Passive investing, the idea is you stick at the same stock allocation no matter how high stock prices go, which your common sense should tell you makes no sense. Obviously, any product you buy, you want to buy at a reasonable price. So when stocks go to unreasonable price levels, you want to cut back your stock allocation. That's simple common sense. That's what Rob Bennett recommends. The five words of Rob Bennett's investing message are: valuations affect long-term returns. Valuations affect long-term returns. I'm going to be saying that like a mantra in these podcasts, because that's the message I want to get out. Valuation affects long-term returns. Therefore, passive investing, sticking with the same stock allocation, no matter how high prices get, is nonsense, dangerous nonsense. So don't buy into that idea. And if you just don't buy into that idea, stock investing is fairly easy to understand. It is the craziness of the passive investing idea that makes it all seem so complicated and so impossible to understand. So my point when I say I know more about stock investing than John Bogle has read more books about investing than Rob Bennett has, and he has far, far more experience than Rob Bennett has, and he has managed huge mutual funds, and Rob Bennett has never done any such thing. So how did I jump ahead of John Bogle? How is it that my investing advice today is better than John Bogle's investing advice today? I jumped ahead because I held on to my common sense, and that's what I advise. That's what I advise all middle-class investors to do. But it's not easy. It's not easy. It's hard. Because when all of the big-name experts are telling you to give up your common sense and to go along with this stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course sort of stuff, it's hard to resist that and hold on to your common sense and say, no, I'm not going to go down that path. So the point I'm making is you really can know more about investing than John Bogle, because if you get the basics right, you will do well. And John Bogle knows a whole lot more about the non-basics than Rob Bennett does or that you ever can. But he's made some big mistakes on the basics. John Bogle bought into the passive investing idea, and that's led him down a lot of wrong paths. So you can jump ahead of John Bogle. And after you jump ahead of John Bogle, I hope you will work with me to bring John Bogle back to where he needs to be. Because ultimately, where I would like these discussions to lead is John Bogle making a major speech that is covered on the front page of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, where all middle-class investors can learn about all of the ideas we've been developing for the past 6 years in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities. So the purpose of this podcast is to let you know, when I talk about replacing passive investing with rational investing, I don't want you to think rational investing is some idea cooked up by Rob Bennett sitting alone in a room somewhere. I'm not the first person who came along with the idea of common sense rational investing. Rational investing has been with us since the first stock market opened for business. So has passive investing under a different name. Rational investing and emotional investing have always been with us, and they're always doing battle. And the reason why so many big name experts today endorse passive investing is that prices are so high. Whenever prices get totally out of control, those are the most emotional moments. Those are the moments when it is hardest to stick to the rational investing approach. But there are lots of people who do it. There are lots of people who do it. That's one of the most exciting findings of our discussions of the great safe withdrawal rate debate. So I'm going to read you just a small sample of some comments from your fellow community members who have studied this, in some cases, in far more depth than Rob Bennett has, and in some cases, people who have far larger IQs than Rob Bennett has, and they've come to the same general conclusions, that passive investing does not make sense, and that rational investing, common sense investing, is the way to go. So I want to let you know that there are people other than Rob Bennett putting forward these ideas. This is not a one-man show by any stretch of the imagination. Here are some comments. Here's a fellow who spent some time with academics, and he refers to somebody, and he says, this guy will put you on double secret probation for doubting the efficient market hypothesis, because without it, it's difficult for academic finance to continue as a PhD-level sport. Those are good words. If you go to passive investing enthusiast and you ask them, why do you believe these crazy ideas? Common sense tells us when prices get too high, we should lower our stock allocations a bit. Why do you buy into this idea that we shouldn't do that? That seems very emotional. That seems intensely emotional. They will say, oh, well, there are studies. There are academic studies that say this. And there are. There are hundreds of such studies. There are many, many studies saying otherwise. There are many studies that reject the passive investing idea or the efficient market theory idea. The efficient market theory is the intellectual underpinning of the passive investing model. But this guy is questioning the process by which those studies are developed. He's saying that they're done as a PhD-level sport. And unfortunately, that's a reality. Some of these studies are wonderful. Some of them are junk. You can't base your investing strategy on a study unless you've studied the study, unless you know what its flaws are or whether it has flaws. You need to look into this stuff. And that's what we should be doing on our discussion boards. We should be looking at the studies and finding out which studies hold up to scrutiny and which don't. It's not enough to say there are studies. That doesn't cut the mustard. There are lots of studies saying passive investing works. All of the ones I have looked at, I have found flaws in them, serious flaws. If you know of studies that back passive investing that are not flawed, please bring them to my attention. I want to know about them. Here's a guy. This is such a powerful post. I'm only reading sections of these posts generally. I'm not reading the whole thing, but this one I'm going to have to read a big section because he's talking about something that is very important. I cannot verify it, unfortunately. I would like to verify it, and I just am not able to. But he's giving a history of his own personal experience. He says, as someone intimately involved in the trading and investment business since the late 1960s, I have felt for years that many individual investors have been unnecessarily damaged because the marketing arguments that stress the benefits of passive investing have taken on the aura of a religion. It's important to recognize that, one, there are some real benefits that can accrue from passive investing. I agree. But two, there can also be some really devastating financial consequences from passive investing. And finally, three, like all other investment products, the passive investing product suite was very successfully developed in the marketing departments of finance product vendors. Developed in the marketing departments. Passive investing is a marketing gimmick, this fellow says. I think that may be true. As I say, I cannot verify it. The information is not available to me, but it does make sense. What he's saying makes sense. Passive investing has great marketing power. Think about what it would mean if a company that sells chocolate cake could get on television and say, we sell chocolate cake, you know how yummy it is, but our chocolate cake doesn't make you gain weight. It helps you to lose weight. And we've got studies. We've got studies. That's the pitch that passive investing makes. Because the appeal of passive investing, on its face, the idea is crazy. The idea of staying with the same stock allocation when prices get out of control. Why would you want to do that? But emotionally, oh, it's gangbusters. Emotionally, passive investing is chocolate cake. You can invest in stocks when prices are going through the roof and get rich quick. Everybody wants to do that. But everyone knows somewhere deep in their heart, everyone knows it can't be true. It doesn't add up. Things that sound too good to be true usually are not true. And that rule applies with passive investing. But they surround it with this scientific aura. They say there are studies, and who's to question it? And most of us don't have time to analyze these studies. So we buy into this idea. And once you buy into the passive investing idea, you're finished to a large extent, because it's real hard to break that. You know, the passive investing people say you have to stick with it forever, no matter how much prices go down. Stick with it forever. There was a poll they took on the Bogleheads board. It left me speechless. They said, how many people here would let their portfolio go to zero before they lowered their stock allocation? And it was something like 68% said they would go to zero. This is crazy talk. The you save for a lifetime and you let it go to zero? But that's the theory, of course. Passive investing says you have to stick forever. You can never change your allocation. You buy and hold no matter what. Well, if you buy and hold, you better be sure you set your allocation properly, because if you set the wrong allocation, you're tied to the mast of a sinking ship. So this is a high-risk strategy, and I think we need to subject it to a lot more scrutiny than we have until now. And but it's a high-risk strategy with great marketing potential, because it plays to the core human weakness, the core get-rich-quick concept. So I think what this guy is saying, it would not shock and amaze me to learn that it was all true. He goes on, he says, in times of market distress, these forums are filled with continuing self and group reassurances that the correct strategy is to stay the course. Sadly, most of the people writing those reassurances demonstrate through their words that they, in fact, do know what is going to happen next. But they are very emotionally and intellectually committed to inaction, because the many valid investment and marketing rationales that support passive investment products have through time morphed into an unquestioning devotion. Wow. Now this guy, what I like about this guy is he's very balanced. He points out that he says here that the passive investing enthusiast, he says they in fact do know what is going to happen next. They pretend they don't. They say, I don't know what's going to happen, so I'll just stick with my 70% stock allocation. But on some level of consciousness, they do know. And you can tell that from reading the post. And of course, he's right. We can't give up our common sense. I talk all the time about how passive investors give up their common sense. The precise way of saying it would be to say passive investors try to give up their common sense. But on some level, they know. On some level, we all know. If it sounds too good to be true, it isn't true. That's why you see such hostility on discussion boards when you report what the historical data says about how passive investing is likely to fare in the future. Because that message has such power, because it connects to what people already know is true. We already know at some level of consciousness. But to become a passive investor, you have to block that out. You have to work overtime blocking out your common sense. And when someone reminds you of what your common sense tells you, fireworks. But he's fair. You know, he points out that there are many valid investing and marketing rationales that support passive investing products. There's a lot of the arguments that people who support passive investing say are right on. They say not to engage in short-term timing. I think that's right on. That's a huge breakthrough. And that's John Bogle, you know? John Bogle's the one that's pushed that idea for 20, 30 years now. It's common wisdom now. Everyone accepts it. Not everyone, but most people accept it. Bogle deserves all the credit in the world for pushing that when it was not such a popular idea. So that's, you know, that's the other side of the story, and I think it's great when someone tells both sides clearly and plainly. You know, don't pull punches. When Bogle gets it wrong and endorses passive investing when he shouldn't, say so. Say so. Well, you're not doing your job. You're not helping your fellow community members. But when he gets something right, say that too. Here's a different guy. The whole thing boils down to whether Rob is able to buy back in at a valuation level that turns out to have been low enough to warrant his absence from the market over the past decade. My guess is that, surprisingly, he actually will. Wouldn't that be a crack-up if what Rob is doing actually worked? I think people would be really mad. Well, I've been out of stocks. I got out of stocks in the summer of 1996. That's 12 years. We've done the numbers on my decision, and I am financially ahead of the game as of today. I'm down for the year 96 and for the year 97, but I'm up for all the years after that. And when you do the overall calculation, when you look at, I was saving a good bit of money in the late 1990s. When you do the overall numbers, I'm financially ahead of the game as of today. That's before the big price drop. If stocks perform in the future anything as they've always performed in the past, we're likely to see a price drop of 50% still ahead of us. And I'm ahead before that. And then, of course, what happens is I buy into stocks when prices return to reasonable levels, and I earn decades of compounding returns from the fact that I'll own far more stocks than the people who left all their money in stocks at a time of extreme overvaluation. So I can't see the future. I don't have a crystal ball. What I can tell you is the odds favor me. That's the idea of rational investing. It's not that we know what's going to happen in the future. It's that we look at how stocks perform in the real world and we try to get the probabilities on our side. And there are years when you're going to be down if you follow these strategies. There's no question about it. I was down in 97, 98, 99. I was down. I had people laughing at me. But the probabilities were on my side. And the probabilities have paid off. At the end of 12 years, I'm not down anymore. Now I'm up. And I'm probably going to be a whole lot more up in times to come. And what this guy says here, I think people would be really mad. Well, he's right. There are a lot of passive investors are going to be mad that I end up doing better than they do. But what should I do about that? What would you do if you were in my shoes? I've shared my information everywhere I go. I told people back in January of 2000 that TIPS were offering an outstanding long-term value proposition. I've shared all my strategies. What else can you do? If people are mad, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. They're mad not because I'm doing well. They're mad because they think they could be doing well if only they had listened to their common sense. It's the saddest story to know that you're doing something wrong and to stick at it all the same. And that's what the passive investing enthusiasts teach people. Stick with something even when you know it's wrong. And I don't buy it. Here's a comment that sums it all up very concisely. I have seen many rip-rob, but truthfully, I don't understand what the counter-argument is. Is there a counter-argument? No. I've been at this 6 years. I've seen hundreds of thousands of posts in the great safe withdrawal rate debate. My argument is valuations affect long-term returns. There is no counter-argument. Valuations affect long-term returns. Therefore, it makes no sense to stick at the same stock allocation when prices go off to la-la land. There is no counter-argument. That's why passive investing enthusiasts get angry when you cite the historical data, because the historical data tells us how stocks have always performed. And it is not rational to not at least take that into consideration. Certainly, there may be differences in the future, and certainly, you don't have to follow the historical data in total in adopting your strategies. But to ignore it makes no sense. You need to be looking at the historical data in developing your stock strategies. this guy talks about studies, and he points out that go back 100 years in finance and examine the academic studies of that era. You will see that they are often riddled with assumptions, theories, and analysis that are now considered to be wrong or even ridiculous. And 100 years from now, people will likely view the studies upon which we rely in the same light. Don't stake all your retirement money on studies that people may look back at someday and view as ridiculous. You want to take advantage of academic studies. There are some academic studies that are pure gold. But the fact that some academic put it out doesn't make it true. You've got to look for the weaknesses in the study before you invest based on it. Instead of reading 100 studies in a very frivolous way, read 2 in an in-depth way, and you'll get a lot more useful guidance. That's what you have to do. We all have limited time. We can't read every study in depth. Read 2 in depth so that you know what's going on, so that your strategies are rooted on a solid foundation. Here's a guy quotes Jim Rogers. Jim Rogers stated that new ideas tend to be first ignored, then people grow actively hostile, and only later does acceptance come. It would not surprise me if most people were still in the ignoring or hostile stages when reversion to the mean, that's the big price drop, eventually takes place. So he's saying there's a history of this, and not just in the investing area. It's human nature to ignore new ideas and then to become actively hostile about them and only later to accept them. There's a fellow here that talks about engineers versus non-engineers, and I'm very much in the non-engineer camp. He says, whatever brain transmitters gave them, the engineers, their high level of mathematical measuring and similar skills apparently resulted in a lowering of emotional feeling and human relations skills. Well, we need engineers in investing analysis. We can't live without them. Engineers and economists, numbers people. But if investing is 70% emotional, as I say, then we need non-engineers too, because non-engineers can't do it all. They can't. They can't do it all. So we need to get more of the people who have the emotional feeling, human relations skills, giving us investing advice. And that lets the engineers off the hook a little bit. And they need to be let off the hook, believe me. The engineer types are suffering today. They've got the weight of the world on their shoulders, and they feel they have to be right about everything, and they're not. And they shouldn't be expected to be right about everything. John Bogle should be able to stand up and say, you know what, people? I made a mistake. You know? I'm sorry. And give a speech and explain it. He'd be a hero in my eyes. And I think he'd be a hero in the eyes of millions if he did that. It would be the greatest thing we've seen in the investing world if John Bogle walked up to a stage and said those words, I was wrong. That's a man, you know? That's courage. And that's what we need to hear. That's what we need to hear from these passive investing enthusiasts. Here's a guy talking about my calculator, the stock return predictor. He says, we can disagree on what to do with this information, but I don't think we can debate the merits of this type of forecasting unless we believe this time it's different. Well, that's the point I made just a little bit back. The stock return predictor cannot be your sole guidance on how to invest. Come on. Anyone who looks only at one calculator is a fool. Everyone should look at the historical data and get some sense of how stocks have always performed in the past. If you haven't even looked, you're also a fool. And the passive investing enthusiast can't stand it. Talking about the historical stock return data to a passive investing enthusiast is like holding a crucifix up to a vampire. Because they've bought into this religion. Passive investing is a dogmatic religion, the most dogmatic religion I've ever come across. And when you get to the real true believers, that's the case. And it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It doesn't stand up to common sense. It doesn't stand up to the historical data. And they like to use data. You know, they point to all these studies. But there's always some funny way that they play with the data to get it to say what emotionally they want it to say. So it's not a science, it's an anti-science. The historical data gets you out of that trap. Look at the historical data and use an analytically valid methodology to examine it. And it helps you to get outside of this echo chamber when stocks are at high prices and everybody's saying, buy more, buy and hold, stocks for the long run. You have to get out of that. You have to get a broader perspective. And looking at how stocks have performed through history, not just through the crazy wild bull market, but how stocks have performed through history. That's how you get back in touch with your common sense. Here's a fellow. I have used valuations to adjust my asset allocation for many years with very favorable results. My approach is different and more complex than Rob's. There are certainly more sophisticated approaches to valuation-informed investing than what I offer. I try to keep things very simple. One, because I want to give advice that the average person can make use of, as Bogle did. I learned that lesson from Bogle. That's always been his focus. And that's where we need better advice. So I like to keep things simple. I also believe if it's simple, you can understand it. And if you understand it, you will use it. And if you use it, it'll work. So if it gets too complicated, it leaves too many people behind. But for those who want more sophisticated models, that's great. That's great if they build them. And we need those people in our community. The expected return of stocks needs to be at least the Treasury Inflation Protected Securities Rate for stock investing to make sense. God bless the guy or woman who put forward that comment. Back in January of 2000, the 10-year expected return on stocks was a negative number. The guaranteed return on Treasury Inflation Protected Securities was 4% real. Stocks were providing a return 5 full percentage points better than an asset class with a government guarantee attached. And big name investment advisors were recommending that people stick with their high stock allocations. What does that tell you? That tells you what I'm telling you in the title of this podcast. You can be smarter than these people. Bypass the emotional mumbo jumbo and you jump to the head of the class. You earn more and take on less risk. It's quite a combination. I would never invest in anything without having an idea what the expected return is. For instance, I would not walk into a bank and say, I'll take one CD, please, without asking what rate they were offering. If somebody went into a bank without knowing what the CD rate was, you would say they were nuts. If someone bought a car without asking what the price was, you would say they were nuts. But the big-name investment advisors tell us to buy stocks without looking at the price. They're nuts. I'll say it. If you won't, I will. They're nuts. And I don't want you to be nuts. So think it over, please. Here's a guy. From the ashes of a decimated equity market, will rise an attractive equity risk premium. While waiting, my portfolio is mostly I-bonds, TIPS, and less than 30% globally diversified equities. Hard to justify big equity risk for expected low equity returns. Well, duh. You know, in a rational world, this guy wouldn't have to say this. But in the world we live in, it's controversial. He can't say it. Anyone who says that today at a lot of these boards will be banned because it drives the passive investing people bonkers for people to talk common sense. He's got 30% stocks. That makes sense. He doesn't have 70% stocks, not at the prices that apply today. Buy and hold will reign supreme again, but that is in the future. Buy and hold is built on a faulty foundation. The market return averages 10.5% per year. That looks really good. I'd take 10.5% per year any day. This, of course, only applies when viewed over 100 or 200 years, not a realistic investment time frame. You have to look at how long it's going to take for stocks to pay off in the long run. What is the long run? Do they ever tell you? Stocks are going to be good in the long run. It's true. If you bought stocks in January of 2000 and you hold them long enough, they're eventually going to pay off. But it could be 60 years. It'll be 60 years before you get that 6.5% real return. In 30 years, the return will be quite solid, probably over 5% real. So if you can hold 30 years, you don't have to worry about anything I say. But most of us can't afford the sort of price drops we're going to be experiencing in 10 years, 5 years, or 10 years, or 15 years. I don't have time for further comments, but if you go to our discussion boards, go to my site and you'll find links to the various boards. And we've been talking about this stuff for 6 years now. The idea I put forward in the first post of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate is 5 words. Valuations affect long-term returns. No one has ever challenged it. As I mentioned, this guy says, is there a counter-argument? There's no counter-argument. If there is one, please tell me. I don't want to steer people wrong. But until someone presents me with a counter-argument, I'm not going to believe that there is one. And I'm going to tell people, use your common sense, jump ahead of John Bogle and all the big-name investment advisors. There's a better way to invest. It's not passive investing. It's rational investing. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.